ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by David Pollack and Reese Davis.
Michigan's big move, why the Pokes might be one little upset away from ruining the Bearcats' year, and a coaching carousel gone crazy, and one that's going to have to learn to build the car instead of just driving it. This is the ESPN College Football Podcast for Tuesday, November 30th, the post-rankings edition, Reese Davis and David Pollack. So, David, I didn't think there was any big surprise with the top of the committee's rankings. Michigan moving to number two, and rightfully so, and Oklahoma State moving one spot past Notre Dame.
No, no surprise. You know, Notre Dame played Stanford, so they basically had a bye. And then, you know, Oklahoma State, you know, if you look at the score, Reese, and you didn't watch the game, I don't think you'd probably appreciate it as much. I mean, they gave up a fumble for a safety. They gave up a muff punt, like a kick return. Like they shot themselves in the foot 35. They didn't give up a defensive point in the second half. And they still gave up over 30 points. I thought they played pretty well. I thought Spencer Sanders, I thought they let it rip with him. They let him play the game, and I thought they looked pretty good. So I was okay with that. Obviously, you know, this next week they got another opportunity to make a statement and to win a Big 12 championship.
Yeah, they've already beaten Baylor once, and this Spencer Sanders is the version that Mike Gundy has raved about. He hurt Oklahoma running the ball. He's healthier. He's had a lot of injuries during his time in Stillwater. This is the version they anticipated getting. But this is also, you know, before we break down the game, let's look at it this way. Baylor slipped a spot in the rankings. Baylor is number nine, one spot ahead of Oregon at number 10. I think Oregon's done for, and teams ranked just ahead of Baylor, Ole Miss and Ohio State, I can't envision a scenario in which they get in. But I can see one in which Baylor gets in. Now, it takes a very specific set of upsets and a lot of them, and also they need to beat Oklahoma State. But I would say that you have Georgia, Michigan, Alabama, Cincinnati, Oklahoma State, Notre Dame still, I think, and Baylor are really the seven teams, I think, that are in play for the four playoff spots. Do you agree with that?
I do, because, you know, I can't imagine Michigan getting blown out by Iowa. If they were to stumble and win that game, it would be very close, I would think. And under that scenario, I could still see Michigan, after they just, you know, kind of hit physically manhandled Ohio State and beat them, I could see them still being ranked ahead of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Oklahoma State and Baylor, you know, Notre Dame is not going anywhere because Notre Dame is not playing. So I definitely I'm interested. But like I said, here's the thing. We're sitting at the last week of the season with a lot to cheer for, a lot to cheer against, but we can all stand united and all cheer against the same thing that everybody cheers against every single year at this time, against Alabama. Isn't it amazing? It's all cyclical, baby. It just comes back. And I said you can put it one of two ways, Reese. You can put it everybody's cheering against Alabama or everybody's cheering for Georgia. You pick which way you want to put it. Either way, in order for those teams that are chasing, those teams that want to get in those spots, they need Alabama to lose to Georgia. So those spots open up and it makes it very clear, and more people have obviously a spot to get a hold of.
If Alabama loses, then it's very simple for Cincinnati. If they beat Houston, they will be in. Right? I mean,
is there any scenario where Cincinnati loses to Houston
and still ahead of
Notre Dame because they beat them by double digits at their place? Like, yeah, we saw that game pretty clearly, and it was, by the way, it wasn't even that close. Like it was a beatdown.
Yeah, Notre Dame's better now than it was then, for sure. Correct. But I still believe Cincinnati would be and should be ranked ahead of them, not just because of that. I think they're probably slightly stronger, and I've maintained from the beginning that the opportunity for the Irish, and don't worry, we'll talk about the Brian Kelly factor in a minute, but the best opportunity for the Irish to make the playoff was to go with Cincinnati, not instead of them. So yeah. I think the scenario for Notre Dame, and it may be different now that Brian Kelly has gone to LSU, but the scenario that would give them their best chance would be Georgia and Cincinnati win, Iowa and Baylor win. If that happens, then Notre Dame is in play. Now, it is in the committee's bylaws or in their procedures and their protocols that if a player or a coach is not available, that that can be considered. Gary Barta pointed out to me, and he didn't have to point it out. We all knew it because of when BK was hired at LSU. But he emphasized it wasn't part of the evaluation this week because he was still the coach of Notre Dame. It will be next week, and nothing else changes. And I've seen a lot of people say, and they're very esteemed competitors and colleagues who think that Notre Dame is done for, and they likely are. But the scenario that we laid out earlier is it would be hard to leave them out. So I don't think it's completely over. Absent the evaluation of we're not going with Notre Dame because we don't love them to begin with, and we sure don't love them when we don't even know who the coach is going to be or with an interim coach.
Well, and remember, Notre Dame's only quality win lost to Minnesota this past week. That was really, it was a good thing for them to kind of have Wisconsin continuing to win. Because remember, they evaluate teams as they are. I know they take into account what they were too beforehand, but you know, Notre Dame didn't beat a team in the top 25.
They didn't, but this whole thing, David, I mean, Cincinnati stays ahead of them because they beat them head to head. Use any metric you want in strength of schedule, and their strength of schedule is comparable. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm not arguing they're one of the four best. I'm not arguing that they play this murderer's row schedule. I just think that a lot of us have thrown out, well, they haven't beaten anybody.
No.
But their overall ranking of the schedule right now, by any metric, I think maybe, or two of the three metrics, is better than Georgia's. It was better than Ohio State's until last week. It's comparable to Alabama's. You know, it's not, when I say comparable, it's within 5-8 spots, depending on the system that you're looking at. So they're 40 spots ahead of Cincinnati, you know, 40 to 50 spots.
And Reese, let's be honest of what this playoff has been too. Like, if we're being completely honest with the playoff, like, Georgia should have gotten in another time, at least one other time. If you're talking about best team, like, we can go back over the years and go, that team was better than that team. We're almost 100% sure because we have a body of work. But what happened? They had to play Alabama in the championship game, or you know, something happened late in the season where you had. That's part of it. Like, that's part of the deal. That's why we like that it's a whole schedule. Mm-hmm. You take in the whole body of work, and that's good by me. Like, that's part of the process. That's how it's going to work.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing. I do think this year is a little bit different, David, because the years you mentioned, you certainly could have made a case for Georgia, but as I recall, that year, that would have been 18, right? Georgia had, I think, a 3-touchdown loss to LSU. And that's happened to a lot. Like, Penn State had a disqualifying loss. They got destroyed by Michigan. But this year, unlike those years, I don't think outside of Georgia that any team has set itself so far apart that you say they are unequivocally better. I don't really care what the resume says. And that goes for Alabama, and that goes for Michigan. I think Michigan probably is close to being, you know, absent maybe just a perfect set of circumstances. They have a decent shot if they lose, I think, you know, unless Oklahoma State and Cincinnati look good. And certainly if Alabama beats Georgia, then that would knock them out. But, you know, I don't see a world in which Michigan loses to Iowa.
I'm just saying, how awesome is this? If we expanded the playoffs, we'd have more debates and we'd have more teams to talk about. And I'm sure we'd still have similar discussions. But how awesome is this that we're discussing how important championship Saturday week? How awesome is it that we're talking about seven teams? How awesome is it that we're going to talk about teams like Oklahoma State who have never been in the playoffs, Cincinnati who have never been in the playoffs? Like, that, everybody complains, well, college football sucks this year. Well, no, we've got parity. No. You've won a parity. Like, and now we have parity. We're talking about so many other teams. I thoroughly enjoy that we've kind of expanded and we have more teams to talk about.
Well, it's been my contention for quite some time. If you don't like it, if you don't like Alabama and Ohio State and Clemson dominating the playoff, beat them. And that's happened with Clemson and Ohio State. And it likely, You know, look, I'm not counting Alabama out. Alabama's a really good team. They're not what they've been the last few years, but it's likely going to happen to Alabama. And if those favored scenarios come through, this year's playoff field will have a grand total of one playoff appearance. Georgia's appearance in 2017 will be the only one. Everybody else will be new. And, you know, that has driven the expansion talk. It's driven the, you know, the playoff is boring. We've got to do something different. And that's all well and good. It's fine to do that. It's fine to expand. I understand maybe the 8 team is getting a little more traction right now than the 12, but you know, we'll see how there's a lot of negotiating to do there. But as it stands right now, I think you're right. I think it's really healthy that you've had teams rise up and do that. We didn't have to expand it. And I'm not against expansion, but we didn't have to expand it to get new blood into it. We had teams step up and beat people, and good for them. It makes it, they've earned their way there. And I look forward to seeing how it plays out on Championship Saturday. It's going to be a lot of fun, especially if last
week was an indication. No doubt. And if this season was any indication, something's coming. Like there ain't no way we're going favorite. That's not going to happen.
I mean, you said last week something that I thought was really interesting, and I loved it because you admitted it. So many hardcore look, I was a terrible high school player, but so I don't consider myself a player. You know, you guys are players. So many players and coaches look at it as a sign of weakness to admit the obvious when it comes to the mental aspect. And if I may borrow your phrase from you, you said that shiznick is real, talking about the albatross, the burden of facing a team that you hadn't beaten, as Oklahoma State did, as Michigan did.
Yep.
And the cathartic release of the players and the fans was really something to see in both Ann Arbor and in Stillwater.
It was awesome. You know, we've been doing this so long, and we have our, you know, individual team, obviously, and that we went to and the universities that we went to. So we're naturally going to cheer for them. But like, then when you get to a Saturday like this, it's just, I found myself 1000% cheering for the abused. You know what I'm saying? Like cheering for the team that have gone through so, like, they've been through, like, you look at Michigan and all the losses and all the talk and all the trash talk and all the people that have slammed Harbaugh and slammed their program. Like, it was fun to watch. You look at Oklahoma State, no matter what they do, Mike Gundy can't beat Oklahoma. It was an enjoyable Saturday to watch, you know, some people take some stress out and get to some points that they've never got to before, man. That was really cool to see. And I bet you those fan bases, that's why they were so jacked and partying like it was 1999, bro.
I didn't know if they were ever going to empty the big house. Before we move on, David,
they should still be in there right now.
No doubt about it. Why not? They just stay until the Iowa game kicks off. Before we move on, I want to mention that across all of ESPN, we're kicking off V-Week today, November 30th. Do this every year around the start of college basketball season to honor our teammate Jim Valvano by supporting the V Foundation for Cancer Research, a foundation that he announced in his unforgettable ESPY speech so many years ago. Jim's message of don't give up, don't ever give up, means more to us this year than ever before. We're seeing it especially close to home as our beloved teammate and cancer fundraising champion, Dick Vitale, and his recent cancer diagnosis. And Dick has been such an inspiration in the way he's battled the disease, and he has been relentless in his fundraising efforts for years and years. If you're able and are willing to join us today in supporting the V Foundation for Cancer Research, you can give by going to v.org/donate and do so now. We would appreciate it if you are so inclined. Coaching carousel, David, I'm not sure I've ever seen it spin quite this way.
Nope. It's not called coaching carousel. Nope.
What's it called?
It's not the coaching carousel. You can't say that. It's the coaching portal.
Oh, that's good.
We have the transfer portal.
And the coaching portal?
The coaching portal. That's where we're at right now. This is absolutely coaching portal time. A bunch of guys saying, hey, you know, I'm gonna go win over here. I'm in a really good spot. They pay me good money, but I'm going over here to win. I'm going over here to do business. So I like coaching portal. I think we should start that.
You know, there are a couple to talk about. I mean, Lincoln Riley was surprising. So too is Brian Kelly. I want to start with Brian Kelly. And I'm going to Baton Rouge in the morning, in fact, to have a sit down with Brian Kelly that will be across our platforms and on College Game Day. Brian Kelly passed Newt Rockne in the all-time wins list. He lasted longer than Frank Leahy, Eric Parseghian, and Lou Holtz at Notre Dame. Now, Notre Dame historically has cut a little piece out of the soul of their coaches after 11 or 12 years. They're really spent. Aaron never went back. Lou took some time off, but then obviously did go back. But I was shocked to see him leave. I understand some of the differences with LSU, but I do think that it's a home run hire for LSU. Now, the fact that Brian's leaving a team that at least has a long shot puncher's chance at the playoff, it speaks to something else in this sport that needs to be addressed in terms of how, not how contracts are enforced to the end, but when you make changes. Because, I mean, look, if you can't blame a coach for leaving, if a guy is going to get fired 5 months after an extension or less than 2 years after a national championship, you can't blame a coach for taking another opportunity. I certainly don't blame Brian for that. I would like to be spared any more lectures on integrity or morality or a higher calling of, you know, perseverance and stick-to-itiveness and all that jazz. But the way it happens, and I don't know that there's a clean and easy way to do it, but the timing of the way it happens is, especially if a team's in contention like that, is not really healthy and good for the sport, I don't think.
All right, here's what the Brian Kelly thing told me. It told me that Brian Kelly 1,000% thinks he needs to go to LSU to win a national title. That's what it tells me. Like, it tells me they can get there, Reese, because we've seen it. Listen, Notre Dame has academic restrictions. Notre Dame is not an easy place to recruit. It's not LSU. Okay. LSU recruits itself. LSU in-state talent is ridiculous. The South talent is ridiculous. We don't have to go roster by roster to show you that year in and year out, what that shows. But for him to leave and to go to LSU, listen, what he's accomplished in his career, how many wins he's done, he's proven he's a good coach. He's proven he's a great coach. I just think this shows me that the next step he thought he needed to take to win a national title, he needed to do it at LSU.
What I'm really interested to ask him when I see him, what changed from referencing the Mike Tomlin quote, you know, that would take the you know, magic wand to $250 million or whatever, you know, and he didn't plan on leaving. What changed in that short period of time? Because it seems that LSU had at least tested the waters earlier and had been rebuffed. I do think that there are, you know, there is some thought that he wanted to make sure that he had complete alignment all the way to the very top of the administration at Notre Dame, and that they would pour into facilities and staff. And not that Notre Dame doesn't spend money on football, they most certainly do, but that they would do everything that they had to do to compete with the upper echelon of the Big Ten and the SEC and give Notre Dame a chance to win a championship, because there are, you know, some difficulties in terms of recruiting. As you mentioned, it's a difficult school to get into. They certainly have made some movement. I don't know, concessions maybe too strong a word, but they've made some movement in terms of helping them recruit. And also, there are a lot of highly qualified players who are great students who maybe just don't think Notre Dame fits them. So then that shrinks your pool even farther. So, you know, I hear what you're saying, but there's also the part of me that says, you know, I saw them in Athens play Georgia toe-to-toe, have a chance to win the game. And they didn't seem outmanned that night. They've only seemed outmanned against Alabama. And I mean, I know they've lost a bunch to Ohio State too, but I'm talking about in BCS and in playoff games. And the second time against Clemson for sure. But, you know, I don't think they were that far off. And I think maybe he just reached a stage in his life, in his career, where if he was going to take another challenge, he better do it now. And
yeah,
you know, so.
And here's what I think about that. First of all, if I was an LSU fan, I would rather have Brian Kelly than Lincoln Riley. That's me personal. I just think Brian Kelly, gives off an aura about him that turns a lot of people off. He does. That's just a fact. He's got a brash personality. He's got a lot of confidence. He's gonna turn bright red and yell at people. And you know, he's gonna do those things that kind of rubs you the wrong way. But here's what you know: you're gonna be tough. You're gonna be mentally and physically tough. The line of scrimmage, you're gonna be really, really good. He's always had good offenses. No matter where he's been, he's going to coach really good offense. He's gonna be very structured, very organized. So, you know, I think it's not LSU's first person they wanted, without a doubt. It's probably down the list of good ways, but what they got was everything that they needed to sustain winning. To bring in somebody, dude, Les Miles and Ed O won national championships at your school.
Right.
Okay. Right. I'm not knocking those guys. They're unemployed. Okay. And they're going to be unemployed. They're not going to be head coaches again. Like, they're not going to get other opportunities. It shows you how rich that place is. It shows you how great LSU is. It's a top five job in all of college football. And you got a coach that knows how to win, that knows how to put a program together, knows how to coach offense, that knows how to get other coaches. So I think it's going to be a real big success.
I agree with Brian Kelly as your head coach. You're not going to have this feeling that you're barely keeping it out of the guardrail all the time, that, you know, that you're careening along a path and at any moment you might not be able to take the curve sufficiently, as LSU has had a lot of times with the hat. Sometimes that was merely clock management. Now, I know there were some other issues off the field. There'd be clock management, you know, eating grass, all that stuff that was sort of endearing. But at the same time, when things went poorly, you're like, what is going on there? And then for the success that Coach O had with the national championship a couple of years ago, there was still that feeling with him too, that there was chaos. There was a little bit of disorganization. You weren't quite sure how it was going. And you're not going to have that with Brian Kelly. Now, I'm going to continue my car analogy here, because you brought up Lincoln Riley and said if you were at LSU, you would prefer Brian Kelly to Lincoln Riley. Lincoln Riley is an excellent offensive coach. That is beyond dispute. But when Lincoln Riley took over at Oklahoma, he was handed the keys to a Lamborghini, and he drove the heck out of that Lamborghini. But now he's gone to USC, and it's not a Lamborghini. It's a potential sports car, but you're going to have to work on the chassis. You're going to have to install the engine. You're going to have to make sure that the tires are in good shape and balanced. You're going to have to build the car. He's never built the car. Maybe he can. I think it's a good hire, but he is being asked to do something he hasn't done before. Brian Kelly is being asked to not really rebuild, but to do something he has done before, to fix a program and to maintain it. So I'm not necessarily saying one's better than the other. I'm just saying Brian is more experienced and has a track record of having done what he's being asked to do. And Lincoln, while brilliant offensively, is being asked to do something that most of us believe he can do, but we haven't seen it yet.
Okay. So let's stick with this analogy. I love when we do these kind of things because it's a lot of fun. But now he's been asked to go build this car. But when you've worked at Lamborghini, and when you've had Lamborghinis, and when you've also brought a bunch of Lamborghinis on site and sent a lot of Lamborghinis to the NFL, it's a lot easier to get credibility to build that Lamborghini. And I think players and quarterbacks specifically are going to flock to him. They're going to see number one draft pick. They're going to see Heisman. There's so many things that he's already done that gives him so much credibility. And oh, by the way, in a league that sucks, the Pac-12 has been a joke. The Pac-12 has been awful for a number of years now. Like, they haven't been in the playoffs in what, 5 or 6 years? Like, it's been a lot of mediocre. 16.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's been a lot of mediocre. And so now you're asking him to come in. You look at guys last year that made a national championship run with Najee Harris. And then you look at Bryce Young this year and CJ Stroud. And we can go to Kayvon Thibodeau, like all these guys that are big name guys that are California people that I think now will go, oh, wait a minute, Lincoln Riley's here. This might make this a little bit different. So I think he's, you know, what he's also proven, he's taking Alex Grinch with him, I think, too, which came from the Pac-12, experience with the Pac-12, where he cut his teeth was in the Pac-12. And I thought that was a good hire. I thought they've shown Mark
every year, you know, on the defensive side of the football since he's hired him. So I think he'll do a good job. I think he'll win a lot. And I agree with what you said, but I think he's in a good situation. And by the way, that's why he chose that situation, Reese.
Oh, yeah.
He chose not to go to the SEC. He chose to go where it would be easier to do this. And listen, got well compensated for it, rightfully so, because you should. But he chose that path.
And it is USC. And I am fully cognizant that as he tries to construct the Lamborghini, the Trojan Lamborghini, that is the ethereal realm of auto parts, you know, to be able to put it together. He won't be able to throw a screen pass and not hit, you know, five or six elite talented skill position players, particularly. And then, you know, the linemen, that's always a struggle, according to guys who have coached in the Pac-12 and then maybe come back to the SEC or the Big Ten, that, you know, just, I think it was Lane Kiffin who once said just the sheer number of big bodies in the population, just there just aren't as many.
And I think where Lincoln Riley benefited from the most from where he got to was Bob Stoops' physicality, the linemen. Like, they've always run the air raid system. The air raid system has had success, but never proven it could sustain long-term success because they couldn't run the football. They couldn't have physicality. Where Bob Stoops already brought that edge, that edge he's always had. That team adopted it and took it. Now, the further it got removed, the less the offensive line, I think, has been dominant. And I think can he take it now, Lincoln Riley, and bring it and make sure that we get the trenches taken care of. And it's not just skill. It's not just quarterback. Cause that will go a long way determining whether he can be in the playoffs and be a consistent at power.
Before we turn the page to Championship Saturday, now we've got two more marquee job openings, Oklahoma and Notre Dame. Let's start with Notre Dame. Who would you try to hire?
I think the first name that comes to mind, and this is cheap because everybody else has already said it too, but we've been talking about it for weeks. We talked about it while we were at Cincinnati because we were hearing Brian Kelly possibly to USC. And then we said, well, if he goes to USC, the Cincinnati pipeline goes straight from – apparently it goes from Cincinnati straight to South Bend. And again, why? Why does it make sense? It makes sense because Luke Fickell's a no-nonsense guy, his background – his Ohio roots with what he has there, recruiting the area, knowing what he's dealing with. So I think it makes a lot of sense. You went to that well with Brian Kelly. It worked for a long time, a lot of sustained success. I think Luke Fickell would be a great fit right away, right off Jump Street. Already learned how to do, you know, listen, took his lumps at Ohio State when he didn't know what he was doing. Come back, showed you what he's made of, what's inside of his chest, how he could build it. And now I think he could do it in big time anywhere.
I certainly think that is the most likely scenario, although the timing might mess this up. But I think everything you said in describing Luke Fickell and how he would fit at Notre Dame would also apply to Matt Campbell. And I think that Notre Dame would be well served to evaluate him and decide if that's where they want to go. And also, I wouldn't be surprised to see Oklahoma and Notre Dame get into a bit of a wrestling match for the Iowa State coach, you know, because I think he would also be a really good fit at Oklahoma. He already knows the Big 12. I know they're leaving, but he's familiar with the area. It has been long rumored, though Matt keeps things close to the vest, that the jobs that he coveted most would be Ohio State, Michigan, Notre Dame. And I think Notre Dame would be wise to consider him strongly and evaluate which guy they think is best. And if they feel like they need to make the move prior to the presumed playoff opportunity for Cincinnati, then maybe you lean Campbell. Maybe that's the difference maker. But I think Oklahoma, even though I saw what Barry Switzer said, he wanted Mike Leach. But I think they would be, I think they'd be smart to, consider Campbell. Yeah, that's what he said. Yeah. Well, he was the offensive coordinator there the first year of the Stoops era.
Yeah, I got you. I was also, you know, in 12th grade once. Matt Campbell to me makes a lot of sense at Notre Dame as well. Because I think Matt Campbell, again, he's a guy that you watch him. He embraces his players. He develops his players. He knows how to take a three-star kid and turn him into a five-star kid. I think he'd be a great fit from a personality standpoint, like very even keel, very straightforward, very by the book, I think it would fit the Notre Dame culture as well. I think those two names, here's a name for you that I don't understand. I can't understand this for the life of me. Why Mark Stoops doesn't get a job. That dude has taken, he can use the transfer portal. He can, mm-hmm. he recruits gems. He finds hidden gems. He mm-hmm. recruits his tail off. He's got some swag. Every team he builds hits you in the freaking mouth, like mm-hmm. punches you in the throat. Listen, you're talking about Kentucky. That's hard to do, bro.
Yeah.
That's a basketball school. So I'm very interested. I just curious why, like Oklahoma, you got relationships with Stoops. Why is that not a name that comes up that somebody that could come in and be successful? Like a lot of jobs, I think Mark Stoops would do a heck of a job.
I would buy that. You're right, too. It's you and I both grew up in SEC territory. We know what a football wasteland Kentucky has been for much of our lifetime. And Mark Stoops has made them consistently good. And yeah, I agree with that. That's a great point. For whatever reason, I think sometimes athletic directors don't view that as the sexy hire that would win the press conference or whatever. I really like Florida's hire with Billy Napier, but if they had hired Mark Stoops, I would have thought that was an excellent hire too. So
I would let's put it this way. If I'm talking about from a Georgia perspective as an alum, I'd fear Mark Stoops at Florida more than I fear Billy Napier.
You're going to have to deal with Billy Napier for sure on the recruiting trail. For sure.
Yeah.
So,
and that's
so there's
and
that.
That's the, and that's the
for
number one thing.
Sure.
Well, and here's there. The thing. That's the number one thing Florida fans want to hear. Like that was number one, number two, number three. Like he had to say that in the press conference when he first came. He almost needed to say, hey, I'm Billy Napier. I'm a great recruiter. I'm here to recruit. My number one opportunity, I'm going to recruit. Like, hey, I'm going to recruit. Like every sentence need to have, I'm going to recruit, because that was obviously the biggest downfall of Mullen.
I think that he has won when he was an assistant. I think one of those services that gives recruiter of the year, whatever that thing is. I think Billy won that one year. You know, I wouldn't testify to that in a court of law, but I'm pretty sure that he did. Memory serves.
You sit on the throne of lies and you smell like beef and cheese.
Talk to me, Elf. Let's turn the page. Do the games real quick. What do you say? So let's start with Georgia and Alabama. Alabama should be really proud of what it's accomplished, given what they lost to the draft last year and the injuries that they've suffered at the running back position. Particularly, you're going to have one scholarship running back healthy for Georgia, it looks like. And that's Trey Sanders, who was coming off a horrific injury in an automobile accident right around a year ago, I guess, which many feared would be career threatening. But the one matchup that is just hard to find any answer for is the Georgia defensive line against an Alabama offensive line that has really, really struggled. Bryce Young has covered up a lot of the sins, but they've had issues several times over the last few weeks.
Well, and specifically after watching last week's Auburn game, specifically right tackle and center. Mm-hmm. And both of them during the game, by the way, got benched. So right. I'm interested to see how it works now. You might see a shift on that offensive line to because they right tackle has been a real liability all year. You go from last year having Dickerson, one of the best centers you'll see in college football, to this year, whoever replaced him, what a struggle. But obviously it's been a struggle. And that's the crazy thing to me is when I watch Alabama, just the inability to run the football. Like that's I can't remember that time. I don't think I was alive before that time ever existed, that they couldn't wake up and run the football. So it stresses them. And then defensively, you know, here's the thing that needs to be said about Georgia. And I'm doing a Georgia offensive tape this year. This is a top five offense in all of college football. Like this offense has really grown and found itself throughout the season with a gazillion injuries along the way and having to do this and this and this and this most of the season. You know, George Pickens comes back last week, has a catch. You see he's I don't know where he's at because he hadn't played a ton yet, but you know that if you throw a 50-50 ball, he's going to go get it. Maybe the biggest crime of the whole bowl season so far is that Brock Bowers isn't on the Mackey Award list for best tight end in the country. He's the best I've seen, Reese. I mean, you talk about a guy that blocks his tail off, that's elite with the ball in his hands, elite at the catch point. Like, he's got 10 touchdowns this season. Like, he is doing it. They throw fades to him. He caught a 77-yard touchdown. I'm going to show a tape on game day this week. Reese, when he caught the ball, if you freeze it, there's probably two tight ends in all of college football that you would ever even go, he's going to house that. Like, safeties are right here. He's right here. There's two guys that have angles on him. Other guys chasing, you're like, that's a great 25-yard run. 77, hit his head on the goalpost. Like, amazing. He's a freaky talent, man. He wasn't even the most highly recruited tight end in the country. I don't know how, but he's the best tight end I've seen, you know, this season. Darnell Washington, the biggest difference, I don't think Georgia's elite up front. Georgia's got elite tight ends. Mm-hmm. Georgia's got elite guys that they can use as chess pieces to run the football because they're good blockers and to throw the football well enough. To me, the difference in the game is those two weapons on their side of the football versus Alabama's offensive side of the football.
Yeah, it's sort of an unusual thing. And I'm not trying to say that Alabama doesn't have a lot of really good players. They certainly do. But I think Alabama's got, and you know I'm a Stetson Bennett fan, but Alabama has a gargantuan advantage at quarterback, but it's really hard to execute from a supine position, which, you know, he may wind up. And Alabama, for all the great defenders on Georgia's team, Alabama has the best individual defensive player that will be on the field, and Will Anderson. He should be considered based on what he's done to this point and how he plays Saturday. He should be in the running for the Heisman Trophy.
No doubt. And he can wreck their plans. He can wreck them early and often. It's interesting. You know, the Stetson Bennett thing, like he's second in yards per attempt in the country. Like he's chunking the ball. Like he's throwing it deep. Yeah. He's making plays. I think people look at him and go, oh, he's a cute little walk-on. This dude's really, really good. Like really, really, really good.
I agree, but I don't think he's as good as Bryce Young.
No, I'll say this. Bryce Young, because he's not afforded a run game, I don't know how. I told you weeks and weeks and weeks ago, I'm buying every bit of stock I can in him, but I do think he's been sped up a little bit. I do think the lack of run game hurts him.
Oh, sure.
I do think the lack of experience hurts him. But last week, losing number one, are you freaking kidding me? Like, You lose the dude. Like you lose the dude that literally everybody goes, where's one? Everybody's lining up. Everybody going, where's one? Where's one? There he is. Okay, remember, that dude runs like 4.2. Make sure we don't leave him on an island. So I think that hurt too. But listen, all this being said, you clearly give the advantage to Georgia. Clearly give the advantage to Georgia. I'm a Georgia guy. We've seen this movie. We've watched it time and time again. We've watched it. And guess what, Reese? We've seen the edits. We've seen or the credits. We've seen how it ended. We got to find a way to do Groundhog's Day and not wake up the next morning,
what,
baby.
What did I tell you? Do you remember how I told you that if Georgia or when Georgia finally gets through this, what have I said about this matchup? They're not gonna win on a on a walk-off touchdown or a field goal or a late score. If they win, I think they drop the hammer. And drop the hammer doesn't mean 40-10. It just means a decisive victory.
Well, and if you're Kirby Smart, and I, listen, if you're Kirby Smart and you're inside that program, this is the way you want it. Like, and listen, I'm a competitor. I'm probably over competitive, and it gets me in trouble with my wife and my kids, and in any part of my life, it's gotten me in trouble along the way. I want to take it from them. I want to reach inside of their heart, and I want to rip it out of their chest, and I want to eat it right in front of them. And I want to go win a natty. Yes. And that's the bottom line. I want to go through you. And that might be stupid. And listen, I don't think it's going to be easy because there's been a lot of mental, just like we talked about last week.
Yeah.
There's a lot of scabs, bro. There's a lot of scars.
I think it's hurt them because I think they do want it just the way you said. And I think it's killed them because they played to a standard against everybody else. And against Alabama, they try to beat Alabama. And that's the genius of Saban, is that rarely does his team get domed up about the other team. Maybe one could argue that they occasionally get a little domed up when they go to Jordan Hare. Maybe don't quite play to their ability all of the time, or make ill-timed mistakes or whatever. But that's the thing that you've seen. The championship game, national championship game, the SEC championship game with the infamous fake punt, and really even in Tuscaloosa last year. Although, I mean, Georgia wasn't in Alabama's league last year.
But nobody was.
But the other 2 years, they certainly had double-digit leads, certainly could have or should have won the game. And maybe it tightened them up a little bit. So we'll see if they can overcome that. What about the Big 12 championship game? Oklahoma State beat Baylor the first time they played. One thing that I saw going back through that game, David, Spencer Sanders threw a couple of interceptions in the first half of that game. And on the ensuing drives, Baylor accounted the two drives netted -1 yard. And they didn't score any points in the first half. They played better in the second half. What shot do you give Baylor to knock them off?
I don't give them a good shot. I think, now listen, I hope Oklahoma State, much like Michigan, I hope they don't exhale, after beating Oklahoma and kind of, Michigan beating Ohio State. Whew, like, thank you, Jesus. Like, we celebrated, we partied, all night, all day, all week. I hope that doesn't happen. But, man, I think – what I saw from Spencer Sanders, if I get that Spencer Sanders, that Oklahoma State team is going to play with everybody because their defense is – here's what I love about their defense, man. Just go back and look at some of those closing plays. The final sack, when you've got guys – you got two guys on that play on the ground, on their daggum bellies, crawling to make plays. Dude, I was hyped. It was like 11 o'clock. I'm jumping up on my couch. Like, I'm throwing stuff. I'm like, that is how you play the freaking game of football. Like, those dudes, like, you saw the fourth down play when Caleb Williams scrambles. The guy misses the tackle, comes back and sprints. Caleb had that easily. Comes back, gets off the ground, sprint, like, championship level effort. Here's the thing. Offensive line is not good. Okay, they're banged up. They're not good. They're not overly explosive. But because of Spencer Sanders, they can hold the ball. Because of Warren, they can run it. They can be dangerous enough. But I just think, they played so bad last week and the still win showed me a lot more about them. I would be surprised if this game with Baylor is close.
Oh, wow. Okay. I do think that as much praise as we've given Jim Knowles, and rightfully so, the defensive coordinator at Oklahoma State, the offensive coordinator at Baylor, Jeff Grimes, has done a tremendous job too. And he now they're awesome. Playing with freshman quarterback, Blake Shapen with, we don't know as we sit here now how Gary Bohannon will be, if he will be ready to play, for Baylor against Oklahoma State.
He's a guy that lives with his legs. You're not coming back from a hamstring pull and going to go out there and start sprinting around all over the field, especially when you can barely walk with a hammy.
Yeah.
That ain't good. Like, yeah. If it's one thing if you just kind of felt it and you're like, ah, it's a little twinge, I'm good. This another thing when you're like, eh, and you're dragging your leg. So I don't expect them to be able to play.
Yeah, I would be surprised. We haven't heard yet, but I would be surprised as well. Big Ten championship game, again, absent Michigan, sort of having that hangover. Iowa, really good defense. They're like 121st in offense or something like that. You're going to have to score some, I would think. And it's just hard to envision Iowa. Congratulations on 10-win season. Really, really good job. I have a hard time envisioning any scenario other than an absolute 5-turnover meltdown in which Iowa wins a game.
You know, I it's weird, Reese. They got to number 2 in the country, and I heard from Iowa fans pretty consistently. I think my Twitter, it doesn't go to Iowa anymore, or my phone doesn't go to Iowa anymore, because it's weird. It's just been very quiet, you know, very cricket-esque the last weeks. I haven't seen enough this from Iowa this year against good competition to make me think they could win this football game. Their offense, they're not great. They're not good really at anything. They're average at running. They're average at throwing. They've come back and forth. Obviously, you know, Petras is back in the game now at quarterback. Goodson is running the ball okay. You know, not like he was a couple years ago when he first burst on the scene. Their defense is, there's plays to be had. I love Michigan's attack last week with what they did against Ohio State. And I think the plan, if you're going to play a lot of zone, the plan would be to be very similar to last week. So I'm with you. But listen, all that Iowa, you know, when they were at 2 and all that, you know, this, that, and the other, here's the thing. You got a chance now to prove it. Like, you've got a great opportunity to go win the Big Ten and say, hey, remember when y'all counted us out when we were number 2? Like, look what we just did. We just ran the table and beat them. So I think you got a good pound in your chest moment. If you're an Iowa fan, like,
for sure.
You make a stand, go make this game competitive, go find a way to win, and you're Big Ten champs, dude.
They did a better job than everybody else in the Big Ten West, fell their way. Nebraska, certainly the meltdown helped them. It didn't help them, it saved them. But, you know, good for them, man. I mean, they've shown some resilience and toughness. They've got a very, very good defense. In the American, if you haven't watched Houston, you probably think this is your run-of-the-mill Dana Holgorsen team just outscoring everybody. Defense, you know, I know you could question maybe the competition with the exception of maybe SMU or somebody, but the defense is pretty good too. Could you see an upset in that one? That's the one that I think maybe if Cincinnati gets tight, if Cincinnati starts getting tight about what's at stake.
And I think that's what, you know, that's the game too, that now it's here. Like, Matt, it's different when you talk about it all year long. But here's what I'll say about Cincinnati, for goodness sakes. Every time they've played somebody good, they've played.
Like, yes, they have.
Beginning of their schedule, when it was front-loaded and they had to beat teams that were good, they beat them convincingly, including owning Notre Dame for a whole football game. The game was absolutely never in doubt. So they've risen to every occasion. Every time they've needed a big game, they've brought it. So I expect nothing less. Listen, Houston's run on 2 walk-off, basically kickoff returns, too, by the way. So,
yeah, you know, East
they're
Carolina.
McCaskill, they got a freshman running back that – they got to run the football. They're going to have to run it effectively. You look at the teams that had success against Cincinnati, you know, Tulsa got the running game going. Like, you're going to have some form of balance, some form of run game, because I do think that's where Cincinnati, you got to hammer them the most, is in the run game. But man, I'm not going to doubt Cincinnati now, because every big challenge they've shown me a goodwill with good experience, with good quarterback play, with SMU or whoever, Notre Dame, whoever it is, to punch people in the mouth.
It would. I expect them to be in the playoff, and I expect them to be undefeated, and I think they're better than Houston. And you can't prove this with them by resume. And I know they had some close calls against lesser teams, but I think this year, if they get through it with the 0, I think they look good enough to be in. So let's wrap this up and wrap this up with 2 things. First, who will be in the playoff when we announce it exclusively on Sunday? Who are the 4 teams that will be in?
Georgia, Michigan, Cincinnati, Oklahoma State.
That's That's what I think too. And you know how during the podcast earlier this year, sometimes we did what else are you doing? I've got a what else are you saying? I don't know why, but you like to use this phrase from time to time and you do it to avoid saying bad words. You say ace kicking Jesse. Why is it not an ace kicking David and like a bean spinning Jesse, like Jesse Palmer? Why is it Jesse?
I don't know. You know, when you think of it, the Jesse that we know really well is not really an ace kicker. So, you know what?
Yeah, but he makes a mean pastry.
We can be an ace kicking Reese.
There you go. There you go. You know, Jesse makes a mean pastry though.
Hey, I got one more thing for you.
Okay.
Who the heck are you voting for Heisman?
If I had to cast, well, you know, we're not supposed to say. So I'll say theoretically.
If you had a vote right now,
I do have a vote.
A direction,
I'm not going to tell you who I voted for because I'm going to watch all the games and evaluate. If I had to vote right now, I would vote for Will Anderson.
Wow. All
right. And I probably would have Aiden Hutchinson second. So how those two play Saturday will have a big bearing on my ballot.
I think so, too. I think Will Anderson, if he can wreck the game plan, because here's the thing. Aiden Hutchinson had 14 pressures in that ball game. And absolutely, without him, they don't win that game. And it's not even close. But it's interesting to me that this year now it is acceptable and people are going to vote for defensive players. Why? Because the offensive players aren't as good. But I would love that when the offensive players are really good, too, that we can also appreciate defensive greatness. We're not going to because that's not how we work. But it is good to see guys like that. I tell you what, a guy that doesn't get talked about at all, N'Kobe Dean for Georgia is a freak show. 17, you watch him in the middle of the defense. He's the best blitzing linebacker, Reese, I've ever seen on tape. He's fast. He's a missile. He's smart. He's elite in coverage. Like that dude, you talk about one of the most important players on Georgia's team that you don't want to lose. He's right up there at one or two. I mean, he's a freak, dude.
You know what? Wouldn't it be something if in this year, if you had three traditional defensive players who aren't defensive backs and also double as kick returners and things like that, you know, sort of
crazy.
Yeah.
It shows you how crazy of a season this is.
Yeah, it really, really does. It's a fun season. We've got more podcasts to do, and we'll do some more. I'm told that we get to do more, but not tonight.
Yeah, maybe.
All right, man. Be good. I'll see you at the SEC Championship game.
See you, brother.